Hello, everybody. Today we are doing a relaxing Q&A hangout. If you would like to grow as an artist and you can't take an art class, we've got everything you need here at Art Prof: critiques, tutorials, professional development, and workshops. We are taking your questions today about any aspect of being an artist, and so get your questions into the chat. You can pick our brains, because Jordan, you and I are kind of opposites in terms of our expertise.
Yeah, I am more in the concept art, animation / video game film world, and Claire, you're the opposite. You're more in the fine art and printmaking and sculpting and everything else that isn't what I do.
Plus, I don't mind getting dirty when I make art.
Yeah, well, you know, I can't help it. I don't know. It just always bothered me. I think part of it is because I would mess up the work that I made, you know, like, whereas if I draw on paper and pencil or digital or something, it doesn't get messed up if I smear my hand, because that happened on all my sketchbooks. So yeah.
Half the fun is making mistakes.
You can make mistakes. I'm not saying don't make mistakes, but I'm just saying I don't want to have to wash the art off my body later. That's all.
That's true. You're very lucky you never had to take that drawing class at RISD where the teacher had you like cover yourself with ink and you had to like roll around on the floor on a piece of paper.
No, that wouldn't work for me. Nah.
Well, Amanda's already bringing up Coming to America, which gets funnier every time I watch it. And we have to watch it when I come to LA in May.
Oh, of course. It's a tradition. It's a tradition.
It is. I don't know why it gets funnier every time. You know how some movies, it's like you watch them a few times and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I got enough out of it. I'm like, dude, I need more of that movie in my life.
It's so classic. It's such a classic. I actually had a hard time with the sequel because it felt like it just copied the original so much. And I was like, I'd just rather watch the original. Like,
me too.
It has all the same jokes in it. So, yeah.
So what are you up to creatively lately, Jordan? Because in a selfish way, I like these hangouts because I get to just chat with my awesome staff about their creative projects.
Yeah. I mean, so a lot of my time has been spent at my actual 9-to-5. I work at a mobile gaming company, so I do concept art for that. On the side, I've been working on my Shadowboxers project. For those of you who do not know, it is a comic that I'm building. If you want to check it out, the handle's right there on Instagram. But right now, I'm in the process of thumbnailing the comic and also doing concept art. So I've had to design like a taser gun in the last couple days. I've had to do thumbnailings for the comic. So it's been really fun. I enjoy it a lot.
Tell us in the chat, what are some of your creative projects that you are working on right now? For me, I'm trying to just pump out as many reels as possible and get all that content to you guys. Because I went to that printmaking conference and, I mean, there were days I shot like 4 hours straight on my phone. And a lot of it is being used because I learned how to be extremely efficient about the shooting. And so actually, I used to record hours and hours and end up with a 10-minute video, but now I use practically 90% of what I shoot because I'm that efficient.
How much storage do you have on your phone? That's insane to me.
But see, with shorts, you only need a few seconds at a time because you're not going to linger for 3 minutes either. You can't really.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Retrospective says, I've been trying to emulate 16mm film on digital, trying to make short films to explore composition, color, and video, and sound editing. Well, it's interesting that in the olden days, editing wasn't really a thing people did unless they were film majors. But Jordan, I feel like people are growing up editing videos.
It's an expectation now. Like, even in the animation industry, I was watching something recently where it was talking about how it went from like storyboarding on paper to digital animatics, because that's basically what you're expected to do. And they're kind of merging positions. Storyboard and editor is basically like one thing now. And so yeah, I think it's something that if you want to get in this field, if you want to do social media, that you're going to be required to know how to do and just ultimately be a good storyteller.
And editing is hard because you have your own YouTube channel, The Joe McFaux Show. You should all go subscribe. And I remember when you started the channel, you're like, Clara, editing is so slow.
I'm still like that. I mean, that's why I do more live streams than edited videos, because it takes forever. And there are times where I'm like, man, my haircut's not even the same anymore. And I've had this haircut for 6 months now. So it happens sometimes. It happens. But yeah, editing does take a while. It's worth it in the end, especially when you start figuring out things like how you want to make something comedic or dramatic, or the angles you want to use. It does add a lot when you start switching things up. And it's cool seeing the growth of a particular, you know, creator from the beginning to what they later do.
Yeah, if you guys want a good laugh, go look at our oldest videos. They're pretty hilarious and cringy and bad. Just the growth over the many years. And so retrospective follows up. Makes sense for me, at least, because I'm pursuing an editing career. Well, my one piece of advice about editing, because I have done a lot of it over the years, is you have to be ruthless with the editing. Like, sometimes in the past, I haven't wanted to do that because I'm like, oh, I spent so long getting this great shot. I should use more of it. And I just think I ended up with so much redundant footage because I wasn't ruthless enough about just like getting rid of things. Did you have any similar thing like that?
Yeah, I mean, whether it's video or even with writing or something like, so for example, I was working on my script for my comic, and I'm working with a friend of mine who was basically my editor in a sense. And she would always be like, Jordan, you can cut this, you can condense this, you can cut. And I'll be like, no, but it's essential. She's like, no, it's not, cut it. and then I gave it to someone else to read, and they're like, wow, the writing was so tight. And I was like, really? Like, huh. So yeah, you do have to be ruthless in a sense. And the way that I think about it is like juicing. If anyone's ever juiced before, you take, you know, your apples and, you know, lemons or grapes, whatever it is, and you put it in a juicer, and you only get the essentials out of it. And the rest you just scrap away. So if you can figure out how to keep the essentials, you don't need a duplicate of a different angle of the same thing. Like, it you just have to find a way to condense.
Because, you know, something in terms of videos here on social media, people get so mad if you don't get to the point. I mean, everybody I've worked with who I've, say, watched a video with, their number one reaction, unless the person really makes an effort not to do this, is get to the point. When are you going to get to the thing that you said you were going to deliver? And so we've definitely learned that lesson 5,000 times. That there's just so much you can remove to distill down the thing people actually want. Because the same thing went for artist statements. Like, I'm working with a lot of the BFA and MFA applicants on their artist statements, and you would not believe how much of their artist statement I just cross out. And it's because it really just doesn't work to say the same thing four times.
Mm-hmm. It's frustrating. It's really annoying. I've done it with essays too. I've looked at other people's writing, people who are writing for something in college or whatever, and I'm like, oh, this is so aggravating. Like, why do you need to say the same thing just jumbled up for, you know, five or six times in a row? It doesn't make any sense. And I agree. I think that's also why when we first started doing live streams, you would coach us on filler words a lot, because we would often Yeah, you still do. But especially in the beginning, I think it was really bad, because we would say, and we would monologue basically. And you're like, no, just get to the point. That's what people are here for. We want to know exactly what you think immediately and just move on after that.
Yes, 7A points out the expression in writing, and I think the exact same thing for art, killing your darlings. Mm-hmm. Because you watch it back and you're like, wow, that was so... I guess the word is tight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. You definitely don't want to be overly precious. And I think that's one thing about doing art. If you can do it quickly, especially, or if you think about reels or something, they're usually quick videos. They're meant to be done quickly so you can upload more. And you can't be precious about things like that. If you are, then it just means you're going to put out less content whether it's art, whether it's video or writing, anything like that.
Well, we've got some cool projects in here. Jer is doing a floral sculpture piece for a local event. Wow, what kind of media do you even use for that? And George is trying to learn digital drawing and painting on a tablet. Mm-hmm. And we also have 7A trying to brainstorm ideas for a landscape. Mm-hmm. And 7A says there are a bunch of new AI tools offered in various apps that have a make longer function. Like, why? It's a BMPF button. They should just call it pad your resume, and then it'll just pad your resume for you to make it longer.
I like that. I didn't know that was the thing. I'm going to have to look that up.
I have noticed that almost every app I use, I open it, it's like, see the new AI functions. Are you noticing mm-hmm. that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's everywhere. I mean, even Video Leap has some like AI functions. YouTube has it. Instagram has it. I mean, I don't think we would have called it AI back then, but if you think about it, like filters for photos, it's basically AI in a sense. Like when you get when you like make it the unicorn face or whatever, that's AI. Or even those. I don't know if you've ever gone on those websites where it'll say, prove that you're a human. You have to click and be like, this one's a horse and this one's a bear.
Yeah. You know?
Like that's also AI trained. So we've been dealing with it for years, but I don't think anyone would have called it that until very recently.
Have you ever done one of those verification human things and it gives you a puzzle and it's too hard and you can't do it? I had one that was like, which animal is in which direction of this arrow, and I could not figure it out. Like, I'm not kidding, I couldn't get into the website because
the ones that trip me up are the ones that have the words and numbers that are kind of like elongated and stuff. There are times where I'm like, is that an M or a W? Like, I can't tell, so I have to figure that out sometimes.
And by the way, everybody, if you have questions about anything, feel free to pick our brains. This is a chill Q&A hangout, because as much as we like to create content for all of you guys to learn from, there's nothing like getting to just ask a question in real time and get a customized answer. It's not the same thing as getting advice from a video. So this is a really excellent comment from Janet, who says, but a reel needs to be a complete thought. That is so insightful for you to say that, because I'm actually working with somebody right now to help start a new YouTube channel and helping them with reels and everything. And let's just say I've learned the hard way in terms of promising something in a reel and not delivering and people getting really mad at us.
Yeah, gotta watch out for that one.
Well, I realized the whole thing about making videos is you create an expectation, which is usually the title, something like why Hugh Jackman is the hottest man on the planet. And it's like, if you prove that thesis within the end of the reel, people are very mad at you because they're like, hey, you said you were going to explain to me why he's hot and you didn't do that. And now I'm really mad. I feel like that's the mindset of reels.
Yeah. You know, it kind of reminds me of elementary school. I keep going back to essays, but that's kind of how they teach kids about what a sentence is. A sentence being like a complete thought. And they'll say like, Jimmy picked an apple off a tree. And like, that's a complete phrase there. And so you have to be able to take that and apply it to a reel, like that comment just said. And like you said, you got to promise, you got to make your promises or fulfill your promises.
Susan says, who are some of your favorite artists that you follow other than your group? How about you, Jordan?
Ooh, okay. Let's see. The guys from Avatar, Mike and Brian. Mike
DiMartino. Really?
Vanessa. Hey, some people don't know who I am. Exactly. Yeah. Anyone who worked on Spider-Man Into or Across the Spider-Verse, Sean Galloway. Sean Galloway.
Into or Across.
Either movie. They're fantastic. My mentor, Michael Buffington, Steven Silver, Nathan Fowkes, James Gurney, Sean Thomas, Ryan Benjamin. Yeah, there's probably more. There's more names in there, but I'll just keep it at that right now.
I guess. So I have artists I follow, and I have artists who were never on Instagram. how revolutionary. For me, a big part of it is the German expressionists. Like, I can't get enough of those artists. Max Beckmann, Kirchner, Emil Nolde, Kathy Kollwitz. Oh, there's a Kathy Kollwitz show at MoMA, Jordan. And I was there 2 weeks before it opened, and I nearly broke down and had a crying fit right there in front of the show. They were installing it. I'm like, no.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. So there's that. But actually, I don't think she really counts as my favorite artist, but I don't know if people saw, but Faith Ringgold passed away this week. And she is such an important figure because she was doing quilts and textiles, and she wrote children's books. And it wasn't until just a few years ago that the art world really recognized her. She had a show at MoMA, and she was doing things way before anybody else thought that fine art could be certain things. So she's somebody I've been thinking about recently. And I saw her speak in person at the Southern Graphics Council conference. And the thing that really stayed with me that she said, if you're an artist, you have to outlast everybody. And that stayed with me for so long because it's so simple. Basically what she's saying is you have to stick around. But Jordan, sticking around is hard.
Yeah. I mean, I just got into this game in a sense, at least professionally speaking. So I don't know if I felt the full effects of that, but I do know that as an artist, you kind of have to reinvent yourself unless you want to be stuck being known for one particular thing. Like, I think probably Hayao Miyazaki is an example of someone who has lasted for a very long time and is known specifically for animation, but he keeps reinventing himself in a sense where, you know, he's telling unique and different stories that especially people in the West aren't used to seeing. And I think that works in his benefit. You know, Michael Jackson, as a music artist, he was always reinventing his music. So that's part of the equation, I think, when it comes to success.
Starving Artist says, I'm graduating with my BFA this December and plan on spending the summer working on my portfolio for applying to an MFA program. I'm stressed. What advice do you have? So Jordan, I know you don't have as much experience with that world of MFA type of programs. So how about you give a little advice about just what's it like when you graduate? Because that's a huge transition for people, regardless of what program they're going into next.
Yeah, I think for me, the day I graduated, I was very excited and also very stressed about what I would do next. Because at least for me, I was so used to school as an institution. I've been in it my whole life, and I didn't know what to do outside of that. And so I think that took me some time to kind of get used to. As far as the stress and everything goes, I mean, you mentioned that you're graduating this December. That's still several months away. And there's still a lot of time to kind of get yourself settled and going like, okay, what is it that I want to do now? And really analyzing and figuring that out, because now you're in a place where you can just, I would say, you don't have to be under the headship of your teachers at that point. You can really figure out exactly how you want to run your life.
My advice as far as applying for an MFA program is to make sure you have the correct information, because we do have an MFA group where I provide lots of support and mentorship for people who are applying for MFA programs. And I cannot believe how many people have the wrong information. People will tell me things that they'll say, oh, well, I thought this and this. I'm like, oh my God, no. And so that's the toughest thing, is that a lot of people, they just don't have the right information. They don't know who to ask. I can tell you, I will never lie to you about what it actually is like getting an MFA. And we have lots and lots of resources. The best page for you to go to is on artprof.org, type MFA guide into the search bar. And that's a page that has all of our MFA resources linked. And that's a really good place to get started in terms of getting that advice. But I do advise that you get support, because a lot of people try to make their portfolios totally by themselves with no mentorship, no feedback. And Jordan, that's just so stressful to do your portfolio by yourself.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, part of the reason we built ArtProf is to create a community, right? That's why we do these live streams. That's why we have the Discord. And if you aren't on the Discord, you should get on it. But that you want to get feedback. You want to attach yourself to people who are going to be able to guide you in that direction. That's where the whole thing about getting the right information comes from, because very few people just have all the answers. I don't think anyone has all the answers. So you have to seek that community out. And that's why we're here.
And the nice thing about our MFA group, it's not just me. Lauren is in there quite a bit as well. So that's where you get the two varying opinions. It's nice because Lauren recently graduated. I mean, oh my gosh, I graduated a long time ago, but I've worked with graduate students and things like that. So trust me, it's all up to date. Okay, we have a question from Anna. I wonder if anyone here has experience of being canceled. I was disinvited from a major group show in a hot gallery because my opinions about the war differs from a lot of my peers. Oh, that's so frustrating. I'm so sorry to hear that. I mean, there's not a day, you guys, with as much content as we produce here, I live in fear that we will get canceled. Has that crossed your mind, Jordan?
Is that what? Say it again.
Has that crossed your mind getting canceled?
Yeah, it has. It's kind of hard to fathom. The only thing I can relate it to is potentially like a rumor being spread about you in school that's not true, people not liking you for it. Except on the internet, it's a much bigger thing. I would say this though. I think generally speaking, people who have the most regrets are the ones who don't live up to what it is that they truly believe and they think about certain things. And that's where we get the term sellout, where it's like, hey, you sold out because you lost your integrity. Or another way to say is you sold your soul to this person. So I think we're not going to get into the differing opinions and all that. But I think ultimately, if you can wake up and be OK with the decisions you're making truly without the input of anyone else, then that should probably be the path that you go on when it comes to your work.
I can tell you for sure, we have this little secret. We have some defensive mechanisms that we use that you probably don't even notice, everybody. For example, a lot of the times, instead of making a statement, I'll say, for me, this and this. Because if you say it's me, people are not going to get on you. Whereas if you say all bristle brushes are stupid, people will get really angry for the bristle brushes. And I'm not kidding. People have done that on some of our streams, like really, really angry at me about my opinion on bristle brushes. And so you'll notice a lot of the times I talk about things in my experience, this is what I saw. Maybe other people saw something else. And so sometimes you have to create language that creates, I guess, a buffer that makes it harder for people to argue with you. I know it's not always possible, but we have definitely worked hard on doing that just to avoid people getting angry. I mean, they get angry at us anyway. So it's always somebody who's very mad about my voice. And it's always when I'm on a stream with a male staff. It's always, she's so shrill. Jordan is so relaxing. Thank God he's on the stream to soften the blow of Clara's shrill voice. It's always something like that.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cause those attacks.
People don't like women on the internet. Wow. Anyway, let's see. Janice is saying, speaking of quilts, what's your thoughts about crafts versus art? I think it's such an artificial division in so many ways. I get utilitarian versus, quote, pure art, but still, what do you think?
I've never separated them in my head, to be honest. Like, I always think arts and crafts like in the same bundle. I think it's a creative form of expression, and you know, I don't mean to sound super postmodern with everything is art, but realistically, if you're creating a quilt or if you're creating a drawing or a painting or a sculpture, like they all are art. It takes some form of skill. It takes some methodology, it takes creative thinking and all those things combined in different ways. So I've never once thought to separate them personally.
Yeah. I have definitely heard that conversation many times, Janice. And I just don't think it's that black and white. I think that's the issue, is people don't see the nuances when they label things. This is craft. This is art. And I just know so many artworks and artists for whom I really can't categorize them. I mean, Faith Rimgold is an excellent example, because she did make quilts, she made textiles pieces, and yet she's in MoMA, which for a lot of people is a, quote, fine art venue to be seeing the work. And so it frustrates me when people just go down to the lowest denominator to label something, because ultimately, why does it matter if what you construct is a basket versus a painting that is painted in oil on the wall? I mean, they both have merit. And so I find it frustrating, because I just think it's really making assumptions about work, which I'm not a fan of.
Yeah. I think also you just have to think about, there's a time and place for everything. There's a time where you don't, like let's say that you're working with a young child and you're giving them artsy stuff. Like, there's a time you don't give that child a hot glue gun, even though it can be used to build art, right? There's a time for that. You don't give them the sharpest scissors in the house, right? So some contexts work better for different things. And same with art and crafts. It's all about context and timing.
Well, I'm so glad, Shasta, that you don't find my voice shrill and that you find me and Jordan both delightful. We have a question from Janet, who says, would you consider buying your golden heavy acrylic professional paints that you use when you paint and doing another program on how you like golden? I do not think those were their top line paints. Doing another program. Can you follow up, Janet, with what you mean by saying doing another program? Are you talking about a live stream? I just recently did do a stream on Sunday about golden open acrylic paints that don't dry remotely as fast. They stayed wet for like 2 hours and beyond. It was really extraordinary. I was not expecting that to be the case, but they're so, so different. So if you guys want to see my first reaction to those, that's a stream you can look at. And yeah, this is true. Retrospective says, I often realize that people tend to not consider photography as a form of art, which is not true, in my opinion. And I think that's so ridiculous. Well, Jordan, you've had the same reaction to digital art.
Yeah, a lot of people, actually, this true story, there are times where I would create something in Photoshop and my mom would show my work to other people when I wasn't there. And she'd be like, Jordan, how'd you make this? What'd you use? I'm like, oh, I use Photoshop. She's like, oh. I don't want to say Photoshop. It just sounds so, like, I think what she thought was that I basically just used AI, but at the time it was me actually working and doing the painting and all that stuff. And it, like there's a make art button. And I was like, no, it's just a program. It's a software. And with photography, I will say this, I think it's probably undervalued significantly and by a lot of people. But when I look at something like a movie or something with great cinematography, it's basically the same skills, composition, and there's a lot of beauty there. And unfortunately, some people will favor certain things more than others or not see the value in it. But then for those people who don't value, there's also a lot of people who do, and you just have to find that crowd.
Don't hang out with the people who are not going to appreciate you for who you are, because there are people everywhere who will. It's just a matter of finding them, and oftentimes that's the most difficult part. 7A is asking, Jordan, when you were creating your comic, Shadow Boxers, how did you decide where you were going to have it?
I'm not sure if I fully understand the question. Is it asking, like, where I'm going to host the comic, or is it, like,
I think
where
that's probably it, but you can follow up, 7A.
Yeah, so 7Angel, can you clarify? But to answer the question for why I think you're saying, I would like to have it up on my own website, and then I would like to put it on a place like Webtoon. I'll probably advertise a lot on Instagram and TikTok and things like that as well. But I want to, it's basically a big indie project, at least for now. If someone says, hey, we want to make it and put it in Barnes and Noble, then we'll have that conversation. But yeah, that is how how I'm deciding, just who has the biggest audience, biggest reach, and where I can have the most creative freedom and liberties.
A reminder, everybody, we are doing registration for May and June workshops, and we do have one spot in Imaginary Landscapes. Gotta move fast if you want to grab that one spot that is left. Okay, we have follow-up from Janet. You did a... Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped the question up here from Lena. Sorry. We'll get to you in a minute, Janet. Lena says, do I need to be worried about plagiarizing if I'm drawing something that is described in a written book? Hard to say, Lena, because I don't know exactly what it is that you're looking at. And I don't know how you're drawing it. But I think a lot of it has to do with what are you trying to do with the thing. So, for example, there's a big difference between, oh, I'm going to copy this because I just want practice, versus I'm going to take Jordan's Shadow Boxers comic and I'm going to copy it and sell it and tell everybody that I made it. And so a lot of it has to do with that, because Jordan, I know you've learned a lot from doing fan art.
Yeah. I mean, whenever I do fan art of any kind, I always say what it actually is. My uncle, he texted me because he saw the show Avatar The Last Airbender, the live action Netflix series, and he saw me years ago drawing the characters. He thought the Avatar characters were mine. And he's like, what is it? Oh. And I was like, no, it's from an animated show. They were never my characters. He's like, oh, I was about to say, nephew. Like, and so I never said I created them. I guess that was his assumption. So I would say, always be clear as to what you're doing. And then also, like Claire said, it depends on what you're depicting. If it's something where it's like a character was in a boat rowing to an island versus there was a kid with a lightning bolt scar, glasses, and a wand in his hand, those are two very different things. Right, right. So you want to be clear about that as well.
So Art My Way, you're asking about Canvas of Silk Ties, and you're asking for thoughts. I'm not quite sure what you want us to comment about. So if you could follow up with something more specific with a question, happy to take a look at that. And Janet's following up. You did a recent thing about somebody giving you a pack of golden paint. You don't use golden acrylic. You are comparing them to the ink paints in my experience with heavy acrylic golden. Yes, there's no way it could be an ink. Okay, what I think you're mentioning is comparing them against the acrylic inks. And acrylic inks are super runny and they function like drawing inks, but they're way more potent in terms of the color. They have a little bit more body, like they're not quite as super runny as drawing inks. And I like using them to tint the heavy body. So I actually don't really like the heavy body that much. I just use it when I need like a really fat punch of color. But most of the time, I prefer the acrylic inks. And Python, first time here, fantastic. They are saying, I'm a photorealistic oil painter, pencil crayon artist. How is everyone? Well, how are you, Jordan?
I'm good. My week was good. I'm a little hungry at the moment. But outside of that, I'm okay. Probably could use a little bit more sleep time. I've been kind of working, working on both ends of the candle. What was the saying?
Burning both ends.
Burning both ends. Yeah. See, I'm so tired. I don't even know common phrases. So yeah. How are you, Clara?
Sometimes I look around and I go, wow, I'm not freaking out. And it's kind of a good feeling. This was one of those weeks. I was like, yeah, everything's okay.
That's so
which
awesome.
To me is like amazing. That's like that never happens. So yes, I wouldn't say I'm having a great week. I just am not having a meltdown. And so to me, that's like a great day. And let's see who else has questions for us. Oh, good. We have another person, Noodle Pat, confirming that my voice is not shrill and overly enthusiastic. And, oh, okay, so Art My Way clarifies, I worried about oil paint cracking over time, Have either of you painted on a prepared surface of silk? I'm guessing you have not, Jordan.
No.
Nope. All right. I'm going to go back to the initial question so I can see better. Canvas is silk ties for oil painting. Surface is held up over 5 years. The most important thing, Art My Way, is that you gessoed, primed the surface. Because anything you paint on with oils, you have to have some kind of barrier. Like if you take oil paint, you just paint it straight on a sheet of paper. Long term, that piece of paper is going to get eaten into by the oils. But we actually did a stream recently about archival art materials, and you don't have to make archival art. There's a lot of circumstances where you don't need to worry about that. Like Jordan, I was shocked when I first started studying illustration that actually in illustration, they don't care about the physical artwork.
Yeah, not so much. I mean, all the work I've ever done has been digital, like professionally. I've always worked remotely. It's just like, yeah, just take the file, you know, take the JPEG and work with it. So yeah, it's very different for me.
For sure. And Edie is asking, do you do your own bookkeeping, please, or do you use a bookkeeping service? I definitely have an accountant. I am not doing my taxes by myself. That's for sure. But I do the vast majority of the administrative stuff, which I don't like. But you know what? I get my creative freedom as a result of that. And some things are worth it, in my opinion. Rose Candy is asking, favorite part of being an artist?
Ooh. I like turning what's in my head out into something that looks cool for other people to see. I think it's very challenging to achieve that for a lot of people. I think that's why a lot of people probably quit art in general. They're like, what I'm seeing in my head is not what I'm producing. But after so many years of practice, being able to finally do that most times, sometimes it still comes out like garbage, but most times that's a really fulfilling moment. So I think I like that part of it.
My favorite part of it is seeing growth, knowing that this is what I was doing 3 years ago, and looking at the work I'm doing now and saying, wow, I really got better at that. Or this is a material, I was struggling with it. Watercolor is definitely one of them. And now watercolor is one of my favorite materials, especially for plein air painting. And I guess the other part, well, I know you only asked for one, but I'm gonna give you the second one, is just having a new experience as an artist. When I try a new art supply, or I learn how to draw in a different way, or I hear something from another artist that shifts my thinking, that I find really, really fun. Yeah, so Art My Way, you should be fine if you have several coats of gesso. And Retrospective says, do you think I've betrayed you since I bought a Copic marker after I said how I didn't like them? Guess what? I'm always changing my mind. And I know it's confusing because I wish I could just be super consistent and you guys could always know I think one thing, but I just don't think an artistic brain works that way. Do you think, Jordan?
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think I'm only on the other side of it when it comes to like charcoal or something, because I just hate using it. But there might come a day when I'm like 59 and just suddenly use charcoal again. Just like, you know, my eyes have been destroyed by all these screens from all those years and making the shadow boxes comic. I'm just going to try something else. So I could very well change my mind. But yeah, I wouldn't look at that as betrayal. That even when you're making art, you have to constantly reconfigure your thoughts on it. You know, it's always like, oh, I thought this looked good, but no, this is actually better. It's just that repeated a bunch of times.
Tell us in the chat, how many of you have changed your minds about something, especially with media? Because I used to hate acrylic, but in retrospect, I realized it's because I just didn't have the right materials. If I'd known about matte medium or with watercolor, if I'd known about watercolor blocks when I did it and good paints, I probably would have enjoyed it. But I changed my mind later because I learned about all these new things. Jen is asking, yeah, I don't think you use watercolor much, Jordan, do you?
I took a class in it, but I haven't done much with it since.
Did you use watercolor browns?
I don't know what that is. I never heard of that.
Oh, okay. So yeah. Watercolor ground, I don't even know how to describe exactly what it is, but you apply it to your watercolor paper, and my sense, and I could be wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, is that it creates a certain type of texture to the painting. But honestly, John, I don't have a lot of experience with watercolor ground. I feel like I have a bottle of it somewhere, but I never had a chance to use it. Maybe we need to try a live stream. But a couple of people in the Discord have used it in the Patreon group. So you might actually go there and ask, because I don't have a ton of experience with all of that. All right, everybody. Remember, we do have openings in our May and June workshops. And join us in the Discord, because after this, we are going to be doing a chat, just typing, no voice. But that's where, if you have further questions, you want to pick our brains about something else, feel free to go and do that there right after the stream. Join our Patreon group. This is such a wonderful, close-knit, small group of artists. You get access to weekly voice sessions and also support and long written critiques from me. You can sponsor a video. So if you want to see the video about watercolor grounds, you can help us create content for our community. We have so many videos that were created because of a generous sponsor in our community. ArtProf has a podcast. It's available on Spotify and also on iTunes. Visit artprof.org. There is so much content out there that's not on YouTube. Use the search bar. Subscribe to our channel for more business tips, tutorials, critiques, and professional development. Thank you, everybody. We will see you next time.